Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya. Is it 51?
Yeah.
Okay. Yorkind Vagnindra Vayunam Yamadharma Prachitasam Rupani Stana Adatse Tasmai Shuklayate Namaha Yorkindvagnindra Vayunam Yama Dharma Prachitasam Rupani Stana Adatse Tasmai Shuklayate Namaha. Yeah. You who Arka of the sun, Indu of the moon, Agni of Agni the fire god, Indra of Indra the lord of heaven, Vayunam of Vayu the wind god, Yama of Yama the god of punishment, Dharma of Dharma the god of piety, Prachitasam and of Varuna the god of the waters, Rupani the forms, Stani when necessary, Adatse you assume, Tasmai unto him, Shuklaya unto Lord Vishnu, Te unto you, Namaha obeisances. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. You assume, when necessary, the part of the sun god, the moon god, Agni, the fire god of fire, Indra, the lord of paradise, Vayu, the wind god, Yama, the god of punishment, Dharma, the god of piety, and Varuna, the god presiding over the waters. All obeisances unto you, who are none other than Lord Vishnu. Purport. Since the sage Kardama was a Brahmana, and Swayambhuva was a Kshatriya, the sage was not supposed to offer obeisances to the king, because socially his position was greater than the king's. But he offered his obeisances to Swayambhuva Manu, because as Manu, king and emperor, he was the representative of the Supreme Lord. The Supreme Lord is always worshipable, regardless of whether one is a Brahmana, Kshatriya, or a Shudra. As the representative of the Supreme Lord, the king deserved respectful obeisances from everyone. Not only is Swayambhuva Manu only a Kshatriya, and a Brahmana shouldn't have to, in so many words, offer obeisances to a Kshatriya,
This is not normal.
And the obeisances he's offering him is that he embodies all the demigods. So this is respect offered to superhuman beings, and he's offering it to a human being, or Manu, who's not quite a demigod. He's the first of the human race. But there's no great damage or offense done in offering someone too much respect. The offense is usually not offering enough. Here, we're going to see these two great Vaishnavas and responsible citizens of the universe. One a Prajapati, and one the other, Manu. They're both responsible for establishing human society, each in their own roles, the Brahmana and the Kshatriya. Together they have to set the standards for how human beings, civilized human beings, are supposed to behave, and what attitudes they should have, and how they should address one another, how they should converse. So they have to show by their example a proper, they have to set a proper example. But it's not just that. They're not just acting out of formality. Both of these great personalities have heartfelt appreciation for each other as individuals, not just ex officia, by virtue of their position, their social position, and their status, external status. But they recognize each other as spiritually advanced. It takes one to know one. To be able to recognize an advanced devotee, you have to be somewhat advanced yourself on the devotional path. One who is still materialistic and ignorant of the actual principles and ways of spiritual life cannot identify who is actually an advanced devotee. He can only see external symptoms, external marks of the ashrama, of how everybody is worshiping him. So he sees someone being worshipped, he assumes that person, that someone has followers, he assumes that person must be advanced. But in modern world, it's not always true. Charlatans can attract many followers, and they can dress themselves in so many ways to impress people, but the external signs are not always indication of actual advancement. But how is a newcomer to the devotional path supposed to know who is an advanced devotee? Because, in fact, this is all discussed by Srila Narahari Sadakara in his Krishna Bhajanamrita. He discusses the question of, aren't we supposed to show not necessarily equal respect to all Vaishnavas, but some Vaishnavas have to be given more respect than others because they're more advanced. And he admits, yes, this is true as a principle, that different devotees have different degrees of empowerment by Krishna. And one who has more of Krishna's shakti should be worshipped more, should be given more respect, should be taken more seriously relative to someone who has only a little or less of Krishna's empowerment. Because the empowerment is a sign of Krishna's favor, that the devotee has actually developed a more intimate relationship with Krishna. That is true, Narahari Sarakarna says, but how can a neophyte, a new devotee, know who is actually advanced more than another? In fact, he doesn't have the power, the ability to discriminate. He doesn't have the means to know. Therefore, neophytes, Kanishtha Bhaktas, should indiscriminately offer respects to all Vaishnavas. Later on, they can develop the discrimination to know who deserves exactly what respect. But when they can't judge, they should simply offer the maximum respect to everybody, to all Vaishnavas. So, there is no harm in showing too much respect to a Vaishnava, or even to any person. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's formula is amanina manadina. First of all, don't expect anybody to give you any respect. You should be terrified of it. That people are going to worship me. They're going to think I'm a great devotee. And my consciousness will become contaminated. I'll become proud. I'll become complacent. I'll become interested in the worship. And that will destroy my spiritual life. So a serious devotee should not canvass for worship, should not encourage it or look forward to it. He should be afraid of it. He should try to avoid it, being honored. At least amanina, he shouldn't be looking for respect. It's foolish and self-destructive on the spiritual path to be trying to position yourself so that people will honor you. But manadena, one should has to be ready to offer respect to everyone else. While not expecting anyone to respect you, you have to respect everyone. First of all, we should maintain the social etiquette of civilized human society. A brahmana should be respected. You shouldn't insult him. A king should be respected and obeyed. And a brahmana should be obeyed. You may be above that. You may be a paramahamsa. But you should set an example for the other people and not be disrespectful to the brahmanas, to the kshatriyas especially. So here, the ideal brahmana and kshatriya have to show that example. Even if they didn't feel actual respect inside their hearts for each other, they still should show it, pretend that they have respect, so that others won't become disrespectful following their wrong example. Amanina manidena kirtanir sada harihi. If we want to be able to engage forever in harinam samkirtana, in the glorification of Krishna, if we want to taste the ecstasy of remembering Krishna, then we have to straighten out our dealings with other living entities. We can't remain envious of others, no matter who they are. Even people who deserve to be envied or condemned, held in contempt. Even contemptuous persons or faulty persons, we should not get into a fault-finding mentality in respect to them. Faults may be there, but it's not. We shouldn't consider that we're the judge and jury of everybody in the world. Because that fault-finding propensity pollutes our consciousness and makes it impossible to remember Krishna. Krishna won't allow us to remember him. He won't enter our, he won't manifest himself, rather, in our hearts, as long as we don't have jive doya, a compassionate attitude toward the living entities. In general, of course, how do you show respect or how do you show compassion? Two different things. You know, we should be the servant of everybody. But the superior serves this inferior person by giving compassion or mercy. And the inferior person serves the superior person by rendering service, seva. But they're just two, just looking at the same dynamics from the different points of view, from going up and coming down. But it's the same process of serving. But from the point of view of the superior person, it's called daya. Showing, giving your compassion downward toward the inferior person. It's still service. If you don't have a respectful attitude toward your superiors, a friendly attitude toward your equals, and a compassionate attitude to those who are less fortunate than you, then how are you going to actually satisfy Krishna? How is he going to reveal himself to you? It doesn't happen until we pass through that barrier, the envy barrier, and give up our bad feelings toward other living entities. Well, to speak of actual violence and abuse, and even bad feelings. I think it's the Vishnu Dharmottara Purana. There's a list of aparads against Vaishnavas, ways you can offend Vaishnavas. One of them is, when you see the face of a Vaishnav, you're not happy to see him. It's just a matter of attitude. It's not anything you do. But if you're not pleased by seeing a Vaishnava, if you feel, oh no, this guy, then that's an aparad. Just to think it. Um, even in the middle class, that's Marx says is imperfect, but even to be acknowledged by Krishna as an intermediate devotee, Madhyama Bhakta, we have to come to a certain standard of dealing properly with everyone and having a proper attitude of respect, friendship, and compassion as suitable. Ishvare tadadineshu balisheshu dvishatshu cha prema maitri kripo peksha yakaroti samajamaha. Discrimination. Paramahamsa doesn't discriminate. He thinks that everyone's a better devotee than himself, and therefore he just wants to bow down at the feet of every living entity he meets. He feels utter humility, dainyam. But an intermediate devotee cannot imitate that. If he does, he'll fail. He'll have trouble. If he pretends to be more advanced than he is, a devotee will suffer frustration, and he can become a hypocrite. So, to be honest, someone should realize I'm still on the platform on which I have to make discriminations. But what discriminations I should make, are spelled out. I should try to develop love for the Supreme Lord and love for the direct representative of the Supreme Lord, my spiritual masters. But with the other Vaishnavas, I should try to have a friendly relationship. A friend, I may not be able to have 100% trust in my friend in all every single respect. There may be some things, some faults in him, but he's my friend. I support him, I trust him as far as I can, and I try to cooperate with him. This is the relationships we should have with all Vaishnavas. Friendly relationship, Maitri. And then the non-Vaishnavas split into two groups, the envious and the non-envious. Those who are simply innocent, ignorant of devotional service, but are not inimical to it, are not inimical to the Vaishnavas. They are in the class of Balisha. Childlike. Bala means boy or child. But someone may be in an adult body, but have a childlike, foolish mentality. That is called Balisha, childlike. Although he may be full grown in age. So the vast majority of the human population is in this category. Just like animals are muda, foolish. They don't have the capacity of human intelligence because of their prarabdha karma. They're in animal bodies. But even many human beings, because they have no culture, because they have insufficient education, because of their contamination by the material modes, even in a human body, they have foolish mentality. Foolish intelligence. They also mudas, but not as much as the animals. This is the balisha. Foolish human beings. We should have, a middle class devotee should have compassion. He should manifest that compassion by trying to elevate these people to Krishna consciousness, enlightening them by whatever means is practical. This is the preaching attitude. This is what marks a middle class devotee as something special and what satisfies Krishna. And then the other remnant of the human society who are envious, the Madhyama Bhakta should avoid them. Not fight with them, not try to destroy them. Stay out of their way. Upeksha, neglect. A Paramahamsa may have the special power to transform even the envious. But a Madhyama Bhakta doesn't try to imitate that. He avoids the envious. He concentrates his attention on his friendship with the devotees, his loving service to his superiors, and his compassionate endeavors to enlighten the innocent. By practicing that, fortunately, our Acharya Srila Prabhupada has given us all opportunity to practice that, to practice daya, jive daya, compassion on the living entities. So many opportunities to engage in preaching activities. This is the best thing to elevate ourselves. If we can get off of this low-class, selfish attitude toward life,
just thinking about, even if it's for advancement. You may be thinking positively how to become better, but you're only thinking about yourself, and you're making all arrangements just for yourself or maybe your family. That is selfishness. It is not real civilized attitude. Not a Brahmin or a Kshatriya, at least, has to be better than that. He has to be selfless. A Brahmana or a Kshatriya is a noble person who dedicates his life to the service of human society, of the whole world. Selflessly. A Kshatriya does it in his way. He has to use violence, force, but he's doing it for the service of society. And a Brahmin doesn't use force. Instead, he teaches. The power of his word he uses to influence people. Not to dominate, but to influence. Both of them are selfless. What to speak of a Vaishnava? A real Vaishnava, and a mature Vaishnava, has to be more selfless than even a Brahmin and a Kshatriya. He has to be working simply for the benefit of others. Then Krishna is satisfied. As long as we remain selfish, Krishna will not take us too seriously. He'll accept us as Vaishnavas. But he will not be very pleased with us until we become mature. So here we have two very mature Vaishnavas. Kardama may have some material desire. He wants a wife. And, you know, he actually does. He has some material desire. He's trying to dovetail it in Krishna's service. Swayambhuva is also a person influenced by the mode of passion. He wants to be a ruler. He's got his desires too. But both of them are very firmly on the path of perfection. They're both recognized devotees in the eyes of Krishna. And therefore they take one another very seriously. They have the intelligence. It takes one to know one. If you're advanced in devotional service, then you can recognize who else is advanced. And then you can behave properly. Less intelligent people have to be instructed by Shastra, by teachers, what to do, what not to do in every situation, how to behave with each person. Rules and regulations have to be established for less intelligent people. But a person who is actually making advancement on the spiritual path, on the devotional path, develops the instinct, the insight, to understand on his own how to deal with each person spontaneously. This is the beginning of the development of spontaneous service. We learn how to deal properly with other people. The super soul teaches us. We learn even beyond what we read in the books and what our teachers tell us. Krishna himself reveals in the heart. Tesham satata yuktanam bhojatam priti purvakam dadami buddhi yogam tam yena mam upayanti te. To those who worship me regularly, constantly, and have an affectionate attitude toward me, I give them intelligence by which they can approach me closer and closer. And that approaching Krishna doesn't mean neglecting everybody else. To approach Krishna means learning how to properly associate with other people, not to become recluse necessarily, or a misanthrope. That's not the process of devotional service. We may physically dissociate ourselves. We may live as a hermit. We may live in a cave. But Haridas Thakur was living in a cave, but he was praying for the benefit of all living entities. He was chanting 3 lakhs a day or more for the benefit of all the living entities in the universe. He wasn't a misanthrope, even if he was physically isolated. So we may be physically isolated, or we may be in the midst of the big cities preaching. In any case, the attitude should be one of compassion. That comes as a fruit of actually satisfying Krishna, of doing devotional service in such a way that Krishna is pleased with us. Then he gives us this intelligence by which we can really approach him. And that also involves learning how to be compassionate to other living entities and learning, feeling, developing that concern. Prahlad Maharaj had that concern. Naivodvije paradiratya vaitaranyasa. I'm not afraid for myself of Maya. Tadvirya gaya namaham cha magnachittaha. Because my mind, my heart is fully immersed in the ecstasy of chanting your glories. So Maya, or the worst threat that can be meted out by my father, the demon Hiranyakashipu, I'm not afraid of any of that. Because he said this after the Hiranyakashipu was already killed. But this was always his attitude. He wasn't afraid of anything his father could do or anything the material energy could do to him. He actually wasn't. He was fearless. Shochetato, but I do have a reason for which I lament. Even though I have no fear and no misgivings or regrets of my own, but I'm very concerned and not happy about the seeing the situation of other people in this world. Shoche dato vimukha indriya vimukha chetasa indriyarta. Those who are chasing after sense gratification, I'm lamenting for them. He also told Lord Nrisimhadev, when Lord Nrisimhadev offered him whatever benediction, whatever boon he'd like, he said, I won't even accept liberation from you. I will not go back to the spiritual world myself as long as everyone else remains here suffering. Unless I can deliver them, I don't want to go back. So this is the real attitude of a very advanced devotee. In their own ways, Swayambhuva and Kardama, although they're not Prahlad Maharaj, they have different positions, but they're also, in their own ways, trying to help human society by acting out their social roles and by dealing with one another properly as Vaishnavas. They're hoping that this will set an example. It's been recorded now in Srimad Bhagavatam. Maitreya Muni has described this to Vidura, the interaction between Kardama and Swayambhuva. And we can learn a lot about how to deal with other Vaishnavas and how to deal also with people who are not necessarily in the same social position as ourselves. How to deal on the transcendental level and satisfy Krishna. Okay, so I'll stop. Are there any questions or comments?
Maharaj, what? A couple of things. The example comes to mind, very similar to this, is how Sanatan Goswami, who dealt with the Nawab at the time.
Yes.
A couple of comments, and then he closed the meeting. Say something about that. And then another point is I was just looking back a few verses and noticing how originally Manu offered obeisances, respects to Karma when he came to his hermitage.
Yes.
And in reciprocation, Karma is also given him
yes.
respect. So I'm thinking in terms of someone like Narada Muni, say he comes to the assembly of Krishna, the assembly of Yudhishthira Maharaj, and we hear that they set the example by giving respect to him, even though they are in the roles of kings and emperors.
Yes.
But because he's a Brahmin, he's a sage, they're setting that example. So perhaps here the sage is greeting the emperor. Perhaps it also has something to do with how you treat a guest. I wonder that.
Yeah, that's also there. Swayambhu is the guest now. So, within his means, the host has to properly receive the guest. Of course, how do you, he's a hermit, he doesn't have anything there. How is he going to properly receive emperor of the whole human race? But everything's handled smoothly. It's appropriate, or at least offer him a you know, Kusha meant to sit on some water. Maybe he was able to. He made some presentations. It doesn't say what it was exactly. Offered something to him, what he had. And Swayambhuva was very glad with it. Yes, he's done. He's dealing properly. This is nice. Not that he expected. Oh, you know, I'm a king, and you know, what am I supposed to sit on the floor? No, he was perfectly satisfied. If you're in the right consciousness, you can always figure out the right way to deal with any situation, even an awkward one. Anyway, it's on several levels. Why these two persons are dealing with each other like this? Because of their social position, they want to respect that and not set a bad example. Because this is a guest, and a guest should always be worshipped as equal to God, even if he's your enemy. And because they recognize each other's individual spiritual capacity also. They're looking beyond the superficial criteria to see that this is a very advanced person. And I have to honor him for that. So on all three, at least those three levels, you know, there's reasons why they are each showing one another very great respect. They also have some common interest here. You know, one wants to get married and the other one wants to get his daughter married, so there's something else going on there too. Were you referring to Sananda Goswami when he was advising Chaitanya Mahaprabhu what to do about
Narva
was asking about Lord Chaitanya? About getting relieved from his obligations.
No, in terms of the respect he was offering him.
Oh, in general.
Isn't this a very similar...
Yes, I mean... well, the thing is, he and his brother were in an unusual situation. They were the employees of Nawab Hussein Shah. And that jeopardized, from the material point of view, they were ruining their everything by doing that. We don't have the historical facts why exactly Rupa and Sananda Goswami became these government ministers. One version is that they were coerced, and their, you know, violence against their family was threatened by the Nawab. Other scholars speculate otherwise. You know, the Rupa and Sananda, maybe they had some reason for wanting to become ministers. In any case, here they are. They're now paid servants of the Muslim government, which automatically marks them as outcasts. That, you know, the ordinary Brahmins rejected them for that. They were ostracized from their Brahminical society just because they were working for the Muslim government. And Rupa and Sanatana, where is this? Maybe it's in Chaitanya Charitamrita or somewhere else. Rupa mentions to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that look how fallen we are. My great grandfather would not even look in the face of a Malecha. If he saw the face of a Malecha, he would jump into the Ganga with all his clothes on. And here I am, his great-grandson, and I'm working for them as a paid servant. So he felt very fallen because of what had happened in the circumstance of his life. Rupa and Sanatana both felt like that. Still, in their dealings with that Nawab Hussein Shah, who was a very capricious man, dangerous man, they were very expert. And when you, if you're the working with the king, or if you just even come into the presence of the king, if you're a cultured, noble person, then you have to show him respect, no matter who he is. He may be a tyrant. He may be an irreligious person, but he's the king. What was it? I think it was Sananda Goswami. When he was concerned for Lord Chaitanya, the two of them, Rupa and Sanatana, went to Lord Chaitanya to warn him. You know, you're in the territory of this tyrant. You know, and you're making a big show. You're traveling with a big entourage. You can be in danger here. So maybe you should, you know, not stay here. You should go back to your... I guess if Lord Chaitanya was trying to travel to Vrindavan from Puri, and Rupa and Sanatana advised him to go back, that you don't trust this Nawab Hussein Shah. He can turn against you. And so Sanatan was in the court with the Nawab, and the Nawab asked him about Lord Chaitanya. And so Sanatan said, well, you're the king. You're the representative of God. So why are you asking me? You can decide. You, from your, you, as empowered representative of God, you should be able to tell who is this Chaitanya. So he said, you think? So now Saint Shah's, you know, went into a sort of meditation and thought for a moment. And he came back. He then responded to Sanatana Goswami, yes, I think. You know, what I think is he's the Supreme Lord. And therefore we shouldn't harass him or obstruct him. So Sanatana was telling him, you're the king, therefore you're a representative of God. And your opinion is the most valuable opinion. That's how he treated this man, even though he was so dangerous and unreliable and fallen. And then after that, Sanatana went to Lord Chaitanya and warned him, you still better leave. Because although he's saying this, that nobody should obstruct you, he can change his mind. We can't trust him. So on two levels, the dealing with such a person is that externally you show him all respect, but don't trust him. If you're dealing with a king, with a politician, you can't trust them. In general. Someone who's working for the government or is, you know, the ruler of the government. Or Chanaka Pandit says, Vishwaso naiva kartavyo strishu rajakuleshu cha. Never trust a woman or a politician. So respect should be shown. Proper acting, one should act properly, but it doesn't mean that one puts down his guards and trusts such a person. Does that answer it, or does that get to the point? Or?
Yeah, I was just thinking how Prabhupada was quoting Yajat Bhutimat Sattvam.
Yes.
When he dealt with that he saw that this, which is also described here,
so Vibhuti,
he's got the empowerment of the Lord.
Especially empowered person, yeah.
One has to be able to respect the Lord's presence, even within that individual.
Even in the materialistic person. Yes.
Seems to be like what he's doing here.
Yes.